This is episode number 45 of the Bear Arms Show. Quick note for you as a listener of the show. We have a coupon code from blackbagresources.com. Bear Arms Panda. So that's capital B, capital A, capital P. Bear Arms Panda will get you $10 off. $100 or more from the lights and lasers section at blackbagresources.com. That expires October 4th. So get on over to their website and show them how much you appreciate them supporting the show and get yourself some nifty lights and lasers to go along with all your awesome gun stuff.
Welcome to the Bear Arms Show. Your fun, sometimes witty source for news, commentary, and interviews. We focus on efforts to protect and restore the right to keep and bear arms. Arm yourself with the information you need to protect your rights. With your hosts, John and Michael.
Did you add it later?
All right, so here we are. It's Bear Arms Show, and as I mentioned, episode number 45... This is your humble host, Mr. John Willett, joined as always by my humble brother, Mr. Michael Willett.
Rock on.
Rock on. Oh, boy. So it's a good week to be back in the studio. Want to mention our sponsors here. You can see them at the bottom of the screen if you're watching this on YouTube. We mentioned, blackbagresources.com. Also sponsoring us, we have NJ Concealment Furniture. You can find them at njconceal.co. And Justifiable Force. You can find out more about them, justifiableforcetraining.com. Place to go to check them out. All of them great sponsors. We love having them aboard. We appreciate them doing
those things.
Looks
like Mike is doing some awesome pistol training right now.
Mike is doing awesome pistol training. I saw he's got a Force on Force class coming up. If you look up Justifiable Force on Facebook, you'll see they have a Force on Force class coming up. So definitely something there worth checking out. Force on Force is intense stuff, man.
Person.
Yeah. Yeah, that can get nuts. So thanks to sponsors. As always, to kick off the show, we're going to go through the rundown real quick. Topic number one, we're going to be talking about how gun rights advocates are right, as always, about things. We'll get a little more into that. We're going to talk a little bit about posturing. I like it. And then we'll get into, we only have one item in the Calling the Shots segment this week.
But it's a huge item.
It is a huge item. Celebrate good times. Come on. Okay. So we're going to be getting into all that. But as always, we go to Mike early on here, near the beginning of the show, with the words of wisdom.
And the words of wisdom for episode number 45 come from Jeff Cooper. And he said, if violent crime is to be curbed, it is only the intended victim who can do it. The felon does not fear the police, and he fears neither judge nor jury. Therefore, what he must be taught to fear his victim.
I like it. I like it. You know, it's interesting that you pulled that quote from Jeff Cooper, who...
I believe that I may have used it on another show.
That's fine. It's a good one. And Jeff Cooper is the best, so... I mean, we can have as much Jeff Cooper as you want, but it's interesting because, you know, I was listening, I listened to a bunch of different shows, and one of the shows I listened to, obviously, is Cam and Company, right? And they were just talking, I mean, they're always talking, you know, and just like our friends over at Gun for Hire Radio, they're always talking about the revolving door criminal justice system, right? And how... you'll have felons basically repeatedly break laws. They never do the full time that they're sentenced to. You know, they might even get, you know, a day off for every day that they don't like attack a prison guard or something. Right.
Right.
So They don't do the full terms. And, you know, just this week on the deal of the day, Cam had an instance where they had someone who had basically committed a murder. And he was currently on a suspended sentence. Like, he had been sentenced to 2 years for something that he had done shortly beforehand and had it suspended, right? So he's basically on parole without ever having to actually do the any of the jail time he was suspended to or that he was sentenced to. And this is going to kill me here. I hear this sound of the phone, but that's what we get. All right. So he didn't actually have to do any of the sentence. It got suspended, which means that he's basically on parole for the whole thing. And he, you know, that doesn't deter anybody. You know, when you're repeatedly going through this system and you're constant, you know, because the police aren't going to try and kill him, right? The police are just there. They want to arrest him, make the arrest, bring a guy in, hopefully put him behind bars, right? And then they go, they see the judge or whatever. They go, they make a plea deal. So they plead down to something, you know, for some sort of misdemeanor or something when they could have been charged with a felony. And it's just, it's nonsense. It's just nonsense. It's completely revolving door is the best description of it because as soon as, you know, they're just going in and coming back out.
Right.
And then, you know, until they commit
in our first topic too,
it's illustrated. Okay. And you know, they're just revolving through there until they hit the point where, you know, whatever crime it is, they make headlines, it's a murder, whatever it is. And then all of a sudden, okay, now we're going to prosecute him, right? We're going to really go after him.
No, so, we got to throw the book at these people now. Well, you had five other opportunities for their committing lesser crimes to put them behind bars.
Right.
So they would learn their lesson.
Right. And, you know, looking at this, though,
reformed.
Look at this from the victim's perspective, though, is that, you know, what would have changed if that person was behind bars and they weren't able to commit that crime? That person might still be alive. That person might not have been raped, you know, whatever it is. So, I mean, we got to look at this from like a victim's advocate point of view, too, you know, and that goes right along with the right to defend yourself. If you're out there, you're a law abiding person or whatever, there's no reason that you shouldn't be able to defend yourself. Just like there's no reason that these guys who are committing, you know, these crimes and, you know, they're slowly, sometimes not even slowly, but they're ratcheting up the seriousness of the violence and the crimes that they commit. And, you know, I mean, even places, in a lot of places, the police already know who the bad actors are. You know, in Chicago, they know, you know, within a certain degree of likelihood, who the people are who are going to be murdered or commit a crime during the course of each weekend, right? Like they have a list of people and they can say, yep, these are the people, you know, this is 90% of, you know, who's going to be involved in crime or be a victim of crime. So it's not like they don't know who these people are. And it's not like these people aren't already quote unquote justice involved individuals. So with that, we're going to be going to our first topic here. Mike found this for us straight from NRA ILA this week. Has to do with Australia's gun ban, which has been a topic of conversation during this political campaign. As both Obama just recently before the kickoff of all the presidential stuff. When he was doing his gun ban tour, or whatever it is that he wants to call it, where he's going on CNN and that, as well as Hillary Clinton, you know, they both talked about Australian style gun control laws or the direction that we need to go, which is basically saying we need to ban stuff and then also confiscate weapons. Right? We're gonna call it a buyback, but it's gonna be like a what do you call it? Compensated confiscation.
Right.
So
you're required to turn them in, but we'll pay you for them.
Yeah, right. So I pulled out a couple of things here that spoke to me on this. And the first one is that apparently a 2013 Department of Justice National Institute of Justice memo on the I am just tongue-tied today on the efficacy of various gun control measures concluded that the Australian confiscation program appears to have no effect on gun homicide.
No effect.
No effect. So this is what? This is the, we get whatever we want. We basically banned guns with some grandfathered so we can say, well, we didn't try to take away anyone's guns, right?
Except the ones that they...
Except for the ones that they confiscated by paying people. And no effect on gun homicide.
What did it affect? Well, the article out of a Melbourne newspaper stated that it affected the number of firearms-related crimes. They went up fivefold.
Well, this is just in the past 5 years. They've increased fivefold, right?
Right.
So prohibited people that have been found possessing a firearm went up fivefold from 2011 to 2015. Now, that doesn't cover the entire time after the gun ban, because the gun ban happened like in the late 90s, right? So it was like 1996 is when they had their event that created, you know, some kind of critical mass for this thing to happen. And that's, you know, when they went whole hog on the gun control bandwagon. But, you know, in 2013, DOJ looked back and said, oh, there's no effect on gun homicide. So they confiscated roughly 700,000 firearms. They created a whole bureaucracy related to licensing and registration requirements for the people who want to follow the law, right?
Right, right.
And
law-abiding citizens.
Right, and as you mentioned, there's been a fivefold increase from 2011 to 2015 of prohibited persons possessing firearms. So obviously they're having, the criminals who aren't following these laws, aren't having any trouble obtaining firearms.
Now, this is the other thing that happened. They found out that they're getting even firearms that are difficult to get in the United States. So they're getting right. even more restricted firearms than they had previously.
It's amazing what happens when you don't have to worry about any of the laws.
Right.
It's amazing what you're able to do.
When guns you're just are like, illegal.
Oh, that's illegal.
I might as well go get a machine gun while I'm at it.
Exactly. I'm already breaking the law. You know, what difference does it make if I break this other one? You know, it's the punishment's not going to be any, you know, it could be more severe, I suppose. But you're if you're going from non-criminal to criminal, it's kind of like, I'm already a criminal. If you're already a criminal, you're kind of like, I'm planning on committing this crime, which is way worse than just possession of something. You know, it could be violence, murder.
I might as well have the
robbery.
Most restricted item.
Yeah.
So
the logic
this article also talks about an individual that was involved in the revolving door. He was on, I believe he was on a style of probation when he was apprehended for pointing a loaded firearm at a law enforcement officer 5 months after his release from custody. So, part of the revolving door in Australia is the problem as well.
So what you're saying is 5 months after he was released.
While on probation.
So he's on probation. He illegally possessed a firearm. And I'm seeing here that he also possessed some drugs.
Well, of course. If you're going to have a firearm, you might as well have some drugs.
He's turning his life around, right?
Right.
So he points a stolen 9mm handgun at a police officer. And even though he had the prior convictions, and this, you know, he illegally possessed this gun, and he's basically threatening a police officer with it.
While committing another crime with the drug possession, he gets bail.
He still gets bail, even though he's on his probation. So what does it take to violate probation and go back to jail? Would he have to shoot the cop? I mean...
Yeah, yeah. Does he have to fire at the cop? Does he have to shoot the cop?
Wow. Okay.
Way to protect your citizens.
Right, right. So as we move on from that, we're going to be talking a little bit about our second topic here. And that has to do with posturing. So you might be asking, what do you guys mean by posturing? Mike, what do we mean by posturing?
Posturing is a presentation of a firearm in a non-lethal situation. So if you are in a situation where you don't feel like your life is threatened, but you want to resolve the situation and you do it by presenting a firearm, that would be posturing.
Okay. So just like you could be posturing, which is to make... So the idea is you're making yourself appear more formidable than you really are, even though you might not be under an immediate threat, to stave off the eventuality of a threat later on.
Correct.
Okay. So you're saying that this is specifically something where you're presenting a firearm in a situation where you're...
A situation where you are not, you're not in a life-threatening situation.
Okay. So you're not responding to a...
Use it in self-defense.
And is this is something that we shouldn't do?
No. Should never posture. So this comes about... you may have seen the video of a road rage incident.
It's contagious. Everyone who listens to this episode is going to have difficulty talking for the rest of the day.
You're welcome. So this is due to a video from a road rage incident where an individual, they pulled over to the side of the road, both parties. The individual in question that did this, it appeared that he was well back from his vehicle. He left his vehicle and he came back to the other individual's vehicle and was confronting him. And he pulled out a firearm. Now, as a law enforcement officer, I would say that that would be aggressive. You know, that's aggressive behavior.
Right.
So if you run over to the other person's vehicle and then draw your firearm and then claim self-defense if something happens, you're in the wrong.
Okay, so this is kind of confusing because, I mean, it's obviously a road rage thing. So basically, the way this is reported, 38-year-old guy gets arrested because of this incident.
Florida, I believe, right?
In Oregon City, Oregon. So here you go, trying to blame Florida, man. And it was out in your neck of the woods in the Northwest.
Yes.
That's crazy, right.
Northwesterners.
That's right.
I don't know. I had Florida on the brain or something.
So basically, he got out of his car and he had his firearm with him.
He didn't, I don't believe he had it out until later. The individual that shot the video didn't start until he saw a firearm.
Right, right.
But I believe he stated that he thought there was a confrontation going on, and then he saw the firearm, and of course you're going to be in a heightened state of awareness then.
Right. So this is kind of like the classic thing that you see in the movie, you know, where the tow truck driver is taking the guy's car and the guy gets heated and starts yelling at the tow truck driver. And then the tow truck driver pulls the revolver like partway out of his pants. Like, come on. Right. Is that what we're talking about?
So the scene that you're referencing is from Men in Black, right?
Yeah.
Kind of. But this individual has his firearm completely unholstered against his chest, I believe.
It's like it's, against his gut. Well, yeah, kind of like in a high. Yeah, like a high kind retention. Of a retention. Yep, exactly. One-handed.
Don't mess with me, I have a gun. Yeah. No.
And then he's holding it in his hand while these two guys are yelling at each other or talking or whatever they're doing. So, I mean, he kept it out while he walked back to his vehicle.
Right. But
and then he kind of turned around and displayed it to him again. Like,
don't mess with me. I have a gun still.
You don't want to mess with me. I got a gun.
Anyway.
You know, and that comes back to, you know, when we talk to Andrew Branca, that kind of comes back to the idea that if you're going to carry a firearm, every altercation that you get into could possibly be, you know, is possible that it's going to be a lethal force incident, right? Every time right. that you're involved in an altercation, it's going to be a lethal force thing because if you fear for your life, you're going to present and use your, you know, likely you may present and use your firearm. So, you know, there's that, and this is something that I latched onto after his book came out, was that concept of avoidance being so important to people who carry, you know, and avoiding the altercation. Like, why pull over? You know, I mean, why pull over and get out of your car in the first place? There's no reason, you know, what's the likelihood that they're going to have something where they're going to be able to break the windows here? Like, are they going to be that, you know, and you're going to see them coming if they do, like if they bring a crowbar or something. I mean, and it's not easy to break the window of a car unless you have a tool for it.
Right. Well, even then you would have to break the window and then, you know,
and then do something,
whatever.
Right. Yeah.
But it didn't look like either of the vehicles were damaged, which, you know, shows as a road rage incident.
I guess. And someone got cut off.
If you have a firearm and you completely walk to the other person's vehicle, you're being pretty aggressive.
Yeah. right. He did walk to the other guy's car. Absolutely. Yeah.
Right. The individual that was unarmed or appeared to be unarmed was standing immediately next to his driver's door that was open.
Right.
Now, you're being pretty aggressive with the handgun there.
Yeah, yeah. That doesn't set you up in a position of defending yourself.
Right.
When you're the one
I was a law enforcement officer coming up on that, I'd be hooking you up with the bracelets.
Right.
You know, and I would be glad that I got there before something happened because, you know, I really felt like, I can't believe that this guy's doing this. He's attacking someone. That's how I see it. He's going to attack this person.
Well, he's definitely threatening.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Quick question for you. Quick question for you as a former MP in that. What's the difference, or is there any, between posturing and brandishing? Is there any distinction between those?
Not really, no.
It's the same kind of concept?
Yeah, you're basically... Posturing is brandishing a firearm to resolve to deter a threat.
Okay.
So... Yeah, you're brandishing a firearm. There was an instance locally here a few years ago where someone did that. They were driving erratically, and someone was following them after calling 911 because they had been cut off, and the person brandished a firearm, and he was apprehended for it because. Right.
So here's the thing I have is you're saying that you shouldn't use posturing, right? But I don't want to wait till I don't want to wait till the moment that I'm about to die before I pull a firearm, right? So at what, like, how do you know the threat level at which it's okay to pull your gun, right? Like, do you have to wait for someone to actually make physical contact with you? Or how are you going to make that determination?
So it's very difficult, and being put in those situations, it was a aha kind of moment. You realize that you're in a life-threatening situation and you have to defend yourself. Now, does it have to be while they're in physical contact with you? No, but a majority of self-defense shootings are in those positions because you have to feel that your life is threatened. Now, if someone's coming at you with a crowbar like you're talking about, but they're 25 feet away and you shoot them, you're not going to be exactly in a position to say, well, I was defending myself.
Okay.
Right? So you have to use, you know, common sense in the control of your gun.
Right.
It's very relative to the situation.
So this is something where maybe some force-on-force training might be useful.
Yes. You know, if you knew a place that had some force-on-force training to recognize when would be the appropriate time to present and to have someone observe said training and give you feedback.
There you go. All right. So interesting stuff. Always interested in self-defense. And it's important to know, you know, what's okay to do, what's not okay to do, and just how much these situations flow, where it can be hard to know exactly where the lines are. And I think, you know what I think, and I'm not a trainer by any means, but just my what's the word I'm looking for? Just my uneducated opinion. This is my common sense, is that if I can articulate a reason why that makes sense, I would think that I'd be okay. But I think for me to be able to articulate that, I'm gonna have to know. So you know what? Maybe there's a need for some training there. Is that covered in concealed carry courses over there in Idaho?
The what about when to
about
defend yourself?
Yeah, about avoiding breaking the law as related to threatening somebody.
I talk about it, at least. I talk about brandishing a firearm. And
it's not part of the required curriculum?
No.
Okay.
I talk about presenting your firearm when you're at the moment of defending your life.
Right.
And I've been asked about that a few times. And there are instances where it may happen where you are presenting your firearm to shoot.
Right.
Make that shot. And when that firearm comes out, the situation changes immediately.
Right. And you don't want to shoot if the situation changes.
Right. And that is not brandishing.
Right.
You are in the moment of my life is in danger, and if I don't do this, I very may well die.
Right.
And at that instant, when they see your firearm, they understand that they're in a very bad position to be in. They're aggressing on the wrong person, and they change their mind as to being aggressive or attacking you.
Right. So the idea being that if you shoot till you stop the threat, if you're in the process of getting ready to shoot and the threat stopped, then there's no reason to follow up with shots.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Right. And at that point, you know, you have to call 911 immediately. At that point, you don't want that person to leave, but you don't want them to be aggressive towards you. So, you know, I would say maintain your position.
Right.
Get law enforcement on the phone. You know, call 911. You know, right. And if that person is aggressive towards you, you have to take whatever, you know, steps necessary. But if that person retreats, you continue to call 911 and maintain your position. Don't shoot. Don't give chase.
Okay.
Just talk to 911, give them the description, tell them what happened. They'll get a law enforcement officer to you.
And in that situation, you're pointing to a threat on your life, not a, well, I wanted to scare them.
Right.
Right. Okay. Cool. All right. So with that, we're going to be wrapping this up with calling the shots. We just got one shot to call here. Get ready to party.
That's a big one.
Get ready to party. So Missouri becomes the 11th constitutional carry state, or permitless carry, if you will. And in doing so, had to override their governor's veto. So good on the legislature.
Boom. Governor of Missouri. How do you like that now?
Well done, Missouri. Permitless carry. Now, it's important. Permitless carry, we should remember, removes all the roadblocks for people who might be lower income and not be able to afford to take time off to go down to some, you know, bureaucratic building or whatever, and offices and stuff, and apply for things and, you time know, go take training. Tests and all that. Yeah, time and training, man. It's, you know, and, no, time and money.
Trained. That when they put out certain times for you to go down and get your permit, I dealt with that in Colorado. Okay. Only on Tuesday, Thursday at 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. can you get your permit.
Okay.
It takes all that away.
Yeah. So congratulations to those in Missouri getting constitutional carry through. Quite awesome.
Congratulations. And woo! The people speaking over a governor that vetoed it.
Well done. So with that, that's what we have for this week. Hope you found
New Jersey's next.
Interesting. Yeah, right. Yeah. New Jersey is going to be dragged kicking and screaming into respecting the right to keep and bear arms. So it's going to take some time. But, you know, we're in it to win it. And eventually we will. So with that, I think that's going to wrap up the show. Unless you have anything else, sir.
Nothing else.
All right. So with that, we'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Bear Arms Show. If you enjoyed today's show, please head over to iTunes to rate and leave a review. This helps spread the word, and we thank you for it. For show notes or updates about new episodes, please visit www.beararmshow.com.